This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Say, PTBN, have you heard them yet? Oh, but they're so mocked out. Jenny and the Jams. Oh, but they're weird and they're wonderful. Oh, Jenny, she's a really queen. She's got electric boobs. The network, too. You know, I read it in the dirt. She's a hoe. Jenny and the Jams.
Welcome to Jenny and the Jims. My name is Jenny, and I'm here with my gorgeous Jims, Drew and Matt and Scott. How are you guys?
Peachy.
Doing well.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yes, it's Happy New Year, obviously.
All right.
Thank God.
So we're finally going to wind down this year with another Hidden Gem show. So we are tuned to the Hidden Gem section of the award-winning WWE Network, and we are watching the ECW pilot from 11/28/1992. So we did a ECW-focused show last time that... you know, Drew truly enjoyed, from what I recall, and
with all my heart.
Yes. So I'm really curious on his thoughts on this show and ECW in general. Anyone have any epiphanies during this show? I mean, we can lead with that, or we can build to that.
Well, my epiphany involves a match that happens on said show, so I will save mine for when we get to that match.
Okay.
Kind of mine, too. It's a talking point related to the matches themselves.
Okay. Well, y'all be sure to point them out for me, okay? So I really need to know. Scott, you said you pulled up some info on this show. What did you find out?
Well, we needed to know where we were. And because it was very dark and clearly very small.
Yes.
So we are at the Sports Arena in Kensington, Pennsylvania, wherever the hell that is.
Arena sounds like a very generous term for.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could tell the people that owned it wanted to sound like, you know, tough guys. And hey, we have an arena. Yeah. It's the size of like a bait and tackle shop. So
we have this closet where we're going to have some
exactly. The closet
is it
arena.
Better or worse than the bars from last time?
Well, nothing's better than the Chestnut Cabaret.
The cabaret is hard to beat.
Yeah,
like
or
at least the
sports bar.
At least the bar has an ambiance. This was just a gray building with nothing going on.
It's literally like bleachers, lights, and ring, and that's it. It's bare bones, which is charming for ECW. Yeah.
The lights are barely questionable.
And the ring is ugly. It's like doo-doo brown. What is this color?
Yeah, that's like a Vern Gagne. Come on, Drew. That's like a Vern Gagne old school right there.
Yeah, it has no give. It has no bounce. It is 100% rough looking.
And did you see on the apron, it said ECW, and I swear to God, I think they made it with duct tape.
Yeah, honestly.
You might be right.
I think Jenny, E could make a better apron than whatever untalented Mongoloid put together.
It's not, I don't hate this look, honestly. Like, I like it. Like, if, you know, I know me a little bit of ECW, so this all just sort of fits in that. Like, in 1992, of course this is what we're doing for ECW. So, I didn't mind it at all.
Hmm. Yeah, no, it definitely fit it definitely fit what we're talking about, but it was obviously something that they were working on. It was a TV show. It was obviously local because it was referring to Sports Channel, Sports Channel Philly, I guess, which probably did the, you know, the Sixers and Flyers and, Phillies and all the sports teams. So they probably realizing probably WWF had, you know, the WWF at the time, I don't know if they were, they really weren't doing house shows, obviously, at this point, televised anymore. MSG stopped doing house shows in, I guess, March. JR and I will get there eventually on the mothership. But so, I mean, obviously ECW needed, even pre, remember, there's no Paul here. Paul's still in, Paul's still running the, well, I don't know if he was totally running the Dangerous Alliance at this point, but he was still in WCW, I think, at this point at the end of 92. So
barely.
And yeah, he was like, he was pretty much out the door within the next month. So I think he's doing ECW stuff by the beginning of 93. So obviously they were looking to get some kind of revenue. So, you know, shooting a TV show was probably obviously their best bet, at least locally, you know.
And Scott, now they said, they mentioned Sports Channel America. Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard that. I don't know what exactly that is.
It's a regional network of like pay sports channels. No pun intended. But it was channels like there was a sports channel in New York that did the that did like the Mets and the Knicks. Well, not the Knicks, they were at MSG, but like the Nets and the Islanders and like the other New York sports teams that didn't play at the Garden. Suze, you didn't have it because you had Nesson, so you didn't. There was no sports channel.
Well, there was a sports channel, Boston. That's the channel that the Celtics played on. The Celtics weren't on Nesson.
Seriously, really? Yeah. There was a sports channel, Boston. Wow, yep. I didn't even know that. I thought they just played on 38. Oh wow. Okay, I stand corrected. I never knew there was a sports channel, Boston. I thought you guys just had Nesson. And you know, like where Jenny is, you know, they had like TBS and the Superstation and all that. So sports channel was like a Northeast network, no pun intended, of regional cable channels, Drew. Kind of like you have with Fox Sports LA and it's that kind of thing. Philly had a specific one. Boston had a specific one. New York had a specific one. It was the ones that to go back, not to, you know, mention it ever again, but that's really what Herb Abrams used for the UWF. You know,
right. So
remember,
Sports
Channel has its own world title belt, just to let you know.
Well, that's why I was wondering, because I've heard it, I think, in relation to UWF. So it's essentially Sports Channel America is kind of the conglomerate company,
right.
And then there's little subsidiary stations underneath. Got it. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. So Sports Channel, you know, Philly was probably doing they were probably working with Prism. So they were probably doing the Sixers and the Flyers and the Phillies, obviously not the Eagles, because that's NFL, but, and you know, like college hoops, Villanova, Penn, that kind of thing. So they probably wanted a wrestling presence because WWF used to be on Sports Channel at times. And of course they were on MSG. So the NWA was still funding Eastern Championship Wrestling, so they probably needed some type of revenue stream.
Yeah, I think we determined that they were not, right? Funding.
No. No, they really weren't. I mean, they were using, they, I don't even think they, I mean, they were a subsidiary, I suppose, but I mean, obviously the quote world title was in, you know, Crockett, or not even Crockett anymore, but WCW. So I don't know what their scoop was, but obviously they were Eastern Championship Wrestling. So I don't know if they, I mean, I know we talked a lot about this on the last show about whether they were an indie or not. I mean, maybe they were, I guess. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they were.
Yeah, they probably were. They probably were an indie. So they probably needed some type of revenue. And obviously a weekly TV show was the way to go, obviously.
Making the killing.
Killing. Right. Yeah, obviously, because they, you know, they bought three light bulbs.
Right.
And some, you know, second graders did the aprons.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So we're going to start off with Jay Sully and Stevie Wonderful, who are commentators. And so they're just like against the blank wall and they just run down the card. Jay in his bright red blazer and black tie, buttoned up, very neat looking. Stevie Wonderful, the very opposite of that, with an epic perm mullet and earrings in both ears. Quite the look from Stevie.
He was like a great value Diamond Dallas Page. pretty much.
A little bit, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You see, well, I had him as great value Oliver Humperdinck.
I was thinking that too.
Yes.
I was thinking that too.
That's by what the I was shirt.
Yeah, I was thinking that too by the shirt, but the perm fro was definitely DDT. Was great. But the jean jacket weird shirt combo was definitely Ollie. Definitely. I agree with you on that. Yeah, definitely. I was surprised and a little disappointed that our good friend was not hosting this instead of Glass of Water Jay Sully.
Yeah, I was going to say this show really needed some Stately Wayne Manor.
Yeah, you Stately Wayne Manor needed to host this. Not because as Jenny will attest to on the Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jay Sully is about as exciting as, you know, getting hit by a car. So
yes.
That's pretty exciting, actually.
Unless you're in it. Wow.
And that'll get your heart rate up, right?
Already protesting the topic tonight, Drew, by causing major accidents. But
I mean, he's not wrong. I mean,
well, it is exciting. But Jay Sully met it, needed to get hit by a car. But no. Yeah, it was. I mean, if you were going to have a pilot, obviously you need a straight man like a Gorilla Monsoon or a Jim Ross or, of course, as Jenny would attest to, sexy Tony Schiavone. But you're not going to get Jay Sully was none of those. Not at all.
It was
awful. So I think that was already out of the gate change that would have needed to be made to continue the show.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So we're going to start out with King Kalua versus Tommy Cairo, my love. God, I love me some Tommy Cairo.
The Iron Man.
So I was excited for this. Now, I will always pop for Tommy Cairo. But King Kalua, not familiar with this person. Anybody know him?
No, I've the name sounds familiar. I've certainly never seen him, but he's a guy, and this is something that I'll bring up. Well, I guess I'll bring it up now, but pretty much everybody on the show, with the exception of Sandman and, I mean, obviously Jimmy Snuka, pretty much everybody else was essentially just an indie wrestler for their whole careers. Maybe a couple kind of like job matches on WWF TV or something, but and King Kalua falls right into that category. I looked him up. I think he maybe did a little bit of job work in AWA in the mid 80s. Mm-hmm. It's something like that, though. It's something very minor. And that's actually pretty interesting. I guess maybe it doesn't speak too highly of the wrestlers involved, you could say, but really nobody. I mean, again, Jimmy Snuka excluded. Really, the only guy is Sandman that ever kind of went further in professional wrestling. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. You know, I mean, you've got a TV pilot in the early 90s. And nobody on the roster really made much of an impact on a national stage.
Well, not now, but I mean, you know, that's not to say that ECW won't turn them out eventually, but, you know.
Exactly.
You have to start with this stuff, right?
Yeah, but you know, you just think like, oh man, you know, so and so got his start on ECW TV in 1992, or you know, it's just purely indie wrestlers. Very interesting.
They start out pretty hot on this. King, you know, attacks right at the bell, right before the bell, punches in the corner. They do some hip tossing.
Hot hip tosses.
Hot, just hot traded. Some arm barring by Cairo. Tommy really focusing on the arm of King. The crowd is rowdy, but there's not that many people there, although it is sort of hard to tell, so it's not lit very well. But
there could be 10,000 people for all we know.
You never know how far the abyss goes back in this giant arena in Pennsylvania. So
that closet can hold a lot of people.
It was quite loud. So, I mean, they were fired up for what they were seeing. And I appreciated that, honestly, really. ECW crowds don't tend to disappoint. So that's good. You know, it's pretty basic what they do. There's a there's a reverse clothesline that flips Cairo. That looked pretty good.
Yeah, it did. It did.
I enjoyed that. That was quite acrobatic of Cairo. Some head punches in the corner, and then, you know, the king of this show, the move that I will call the most is the back body drop. Now, these wrestlers love them some back body drops, and if I had a dollar for every time I saw a back body drop, I would have many dollars. You know, but it's not a bad one. And then fucking Cairo gets thrown to the floor. King hits the sunset flip, but then Cairo reverses it to win. Sort of out of nowhere after getting beat up for most of the match. You know, it was fine. It was just, it was a Tommy Cairo match. What did you think about it, Matt?
Yeah, like you said, pretty basic opener, which, spoiler, ends up being one of the better matches of the night. But it was decent for what it was. I did like the finish and Cairo going hard sell after the match with the please, Sports Channel America, please take us, please. We need money, food, please. I was
wondering, what is the point of this after match interview?
The point was, please put us on TV.
It's just so weird. Like, why would you leave that on Tommy Cairo's shoulders?
Yeah.
It's not a good choice.
Of all people.
He's the Iron Man.
He calls his fans Iron Maniacs.
That's awesome.
Tell them to be proud and stand tall, but most of all, never surrender, baby. I was like, okay.
Jenny, are you an Iron Maniac?
Of course I am.
Jenny's big time Iron Maniac. Absolutely. So am I.
Yeah, like you said, too, the crowd, all 17 of them, they were pretty hot, too. So, I mean, yeah, it was decent, was inoffensive, and like I said, probably the best match of the night.
Scott, what did you think?
I enjoyed this match. I like you, Jenny, am a big Tommy Cairo fan. I've always respected him as one of the early stalwarts of ECW, kind of the pre, stretch these next 2 years before the word that starts with E changes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have it's funny you guys are talking about this. I didn't have a problem with the post-match interview. He obviously is a guy that they push as one of their stalwarts. Jay Sully was intimating that, that he could be the next challenger for the ECW world title. Mm-hmm. I thought the interview was fine, but I didn't mind the match at all. I thought it was actually pretty good. I like King Kalua wasn't bad. And yeah, the crowd was into it, all 11 of them and the janitor and the guy holding the lights so they don't fall off the ceiling before the electric bill, shuts it off. But no, I thought it was fine. I thought it was a good opener, and I had no problem with the post-match. I think the ECW trusted Tommy Cairo to be a guy that they would, that they would look at as a player down the line.
Hmm. Do you agree, Drew?
I do agree with Scott. Yeah. I guess we'll get to it throughout the show, but I actually enjoyed the show a good bit for what it was.
Me too.
Yeah, the match was very basic. I thought the hip tosses were cool. I love a good arm bar. Tommy Cairo. Because the idea of what we're doing here is, this is us pitching a TV show, so we have to introduce our main characters, kind of tell everybody what the motivations are for each wrestler. And Tommy Cairo, he got one of the bigger reactions of the night. Mm-hmm. A lot of Iron Maniacs in the crowd. So, I like that they gave him a different, they didn't do a backstage promo with him. They did it at the ring. And so he's able to get over, these are my people, these are my fans. And you kind of get the feeling, okay, well, this guy, he could be a world title challenger. So I it was all perfectly serviceable. And I think really, I love wrestling. My favorite thing is wrestling TV shows. I love a wrestling TV show. Watching it as like a television show with aesthetic and the studio setting or the arena setting, whatever it is, and kind of how the show moves, more so than even the matches. I just like how a TV show is an all-encompassing, you know, episode of wrestling. And I thought this was all perfectly serviceable. And I think, I mean, they, you know, there wasn't much aesthetic. The lighting and kind of the vibe did leave a lot to be desired, as did Mr. Sully. But, you know, they made some mistakes here and there. But I enjoyed this first match. Now, it was in this first match that I had my kind of realization. So I've been working out this idea in my mind. So I actually want your guys' opinion, especially you, Jenny, since you've been watching a bunch of ECW lately. And this match, so the match style to me felt very Northeastern. It felt like a WWF style match. You know, it was a little bit slower paced, a lot of like big blows, not a lot of like, you know, intricate mat work and fast paced, you know, back and forth, stuff like that. So the idea that I've been thinking about for a long time now is that ECW is a bizarro world WWF. And what I mean by that is, and like I said, I was finally able to articulate it, I think, with this match, in that the wrestling style and the presentation is actually very similar to WWF in that you're relying a lot on atmosphere, on aesthetic, on big moments, on big angles, on, you know, there's a lot of very heavy storyline driven stuff. You've got the really good technical wrestlers, but those are often, that's kind of pushed as a gimmick, like, you know, Bret Hart. His gimmick is he's the best wrestler. You had on ECW, you've got like Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit. Those are kind of gimmicks that they are the best wrestlers. They're the good wrestlers on the show. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know. I'd like your guys' feedback on that. What do you, am I way off on that, do you think?
Do you mean bizarro or do you mean great value in that? Because I feel like that's two different things. So, like, do you think that they are trying to emulate this style, but just not doing it as well?
No. I think they're doing it, and not in 1992 necessarily, but in, like, 1995, 96. They're doing it just as well, and they're just as effective as WWF. But where WWF is historically appealing to a greater, larger audience, a younger audience. They're looking for mainstream appeal. Everything is really slick, really bright, like A-plus production, you know, top of the line, everything in front of 20,000 people, 60,000 people, whatever it is. ECW is going the exact opposite way, and they're saying we're the underground, we're the gritty, realistic, you know, bloody, nasty, real, like a lot of adult themes, that kind of thing. But if you boil it down to like the philosophy of a lot of the wrestling and a lot of like the presentation, I think they're almost identical. What do you think?
To me, I think it's also a geographical thing, because Northeastern wrestling has that kind of look that's different from, say, Southern wrestling. And I think that's always been something, you know, after spending an entire year watching WWE matches and now spending an entire year watching, you know, NWA, WCW matches, I definitely see a different way of thinking. And not only the in-ring, but the production value of television. A WWF show, and I trust me, we've watched zillions of them, you know, whether it was Dunn, Bucktooth, Fuckface, or any of these other, or anybody before him, shooting crowds and shooting aesthetics and lots of graphics and that kind of stuff. Whereas Southern wrestling, whether it's WCW or Mid-South or any of those, they're very ring-centric. They like shooting the match. And it's funny because watching this show is different because, honestly, other than the ring, there ain't much to look at. So So you are staying focused on the ring action. But having said that, I do agree that, particularly these two guys wrestled a WWF at the time, obviously, style match with lots of strikes and a lot of posturing, not a lot of chain moves. So I wouldn't say bizarro. I agree with Jenny. I would say great value, WWF, like WWF without the wallet. But the style of the match definitely caters to a Northeastern viewing audience. So I agree with you on that, in that aspect.
Okay.
Yeah. Particularly in the television production of it.
I would lean more towards its great value, WWF, especially at this point. Like, I think eventually you might be right. Like, in 95 and 96, they kind of try to become, like, the polar opposite of what WWE is doing. Yeah. But here... I don't think they're that yet.
Right. And that's what I was referring to is later on. I mean, this definitely feels great value. Maybe even the value where you find it on the street as you're walking to the KFC.
Dollar Tree.
Ocean State Job Lot.
So, like, later on, you know, the era that you're kind of asking about, yeah, I mean... The shit that they come up with storyline wise is fucking brilliant. I mean, like,
brilliant.
It's next level. And
yeah,
the fucking, I mean, me, 95 is my year. So that, you know, that all works for me. I don't think WWF was having such a brilliant year in 95. I could be wrong about that, but
no. You are 100%. No.
I mean,
so if we're comparing
WWE for that matter.
Yeah, if we're comparing those WCW two, then terrible. WWE is fucking great value. ECW.
Yeah, sure. 95 ECW. That's easily the best promotion in North America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, not yet because we're still in 1992.
Right.
So we're gonna show off our tag division here with our champs, the Super Destroyers. Who I remember from our last show, and the incredible team of Jimmy Jannetty and Larry Winters.
Talk about great value.
Wow.
Wow.
Who is Larry Winters?
Again,
nobody. Great.
I mean, he was wrestling. I found results from him in like the late 70s.
Oh, God.
He would just do like a job here, a job there. Some kind of indie stuff, just there would be gaps in his career, but at this point he was almost a 15-year pro.
That's
and actually trained Jimmy Jannetty.
Sad.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, it I is. Wish I didn't know that.
Using the term pro very loosely.
Very loosely.
Yeah.
There is nothing about this match that screams pro from any of these motherfuckers, okay? Unless, you know, pro girdle on the Super Destroyer. They are
the
some massive dudes. They are so huge. Like, I thought that the ring from the last show that we watched just made them look that big. But no, they're just fucking huge. And, you know, this match is something. Lots of stalling. I remember that being sort of their MO. Commentary just... trying to get over how menacing they are, and you know, Jay's a robot, but you know, he does what he can in this. They were all right. They were nothing special in the commentary, so you know, there's not going to be a whole lot of attitude or anything much to add from those two guys. But this was not great. I did not like this match very much at all. HQR3, of course, is the manager of the SD, so he's there pulling his tricks. At one point during the match, they do a random shot of kids in the crowd, and it's like right during this really fucked up move that they try to pull off, and so it I don't know, it's very off-putting, and I really just did not like this, Drew.
Yeah, fair enough. I thought it was fairly inoffensive. I liked that they were trying to work a big man versus, you know, big man power moves versus quickness match. It was not executed the best, but the 10-minute draw kind of came out of nowhere.
Oh, God, I didn't even get to that yet.
So it felt like they were maybe reaching a little bit farther than they should have. Whereas, like, the Tommy Cairo match, that was right in their wheelhouse, and they executed it perfectly fine. Whereas this was a little bit out of their reach. I don't know. I still appreciated the effort, though.
At what point did they remind us that this was a 10-minute time limit?
Oh, I actually have that in my notes here, Jenny. That would be never.
Never times. Okay, because when I was like, he was doing the count, and then he was like, no. And then it was like, wait, we won. Oh, we didn't win. Oh, my God, what is happening? Maddie?
Did the timekeeper or did the ring announcer maybe, did we miss that? I mean, it doesn't matter. It's for TV. They should have showed it to us anyways, but... The ring announcer didn't say anything, right?
No, I don't think they announced the time on it.
Definitely came out of nowhere. I was not looking for that. And why do you have a 10-minute time limit on a
for a tag title match?
That doesn't make sense. But anyway, Maddie, what do you think?
Oh no, this was offensive. This was very, very offensive. This was rotten. So, like you said, Jenny, they cut to the random B-roll of the crowd at one point. I think that was because they fucked up that double headlock takeover spot so bad that they didn't want that sucker making TV, so they cut to random B-roll
just
so that it doesn't air on TV. Like, I feel like that's a WWE thing. You'll see it on, like, taped shows where they randomly cut to the crowd when something gets fucked up really bad. But, this was not good. Jannetty and Winters were trying so very hard to be the Rockers and the Rock and Roll Express, and they are not. They're not even the new Midnight Rockers from WWF 1998. Jimmy Jannetty, I have a note here. He might be Mitch Hedberg. I'm not sure yet. We're still running tests, but he might be. This was absolutely horrendous.
Scott?
I don't know, Suze. I may have to disagree with you because I at first I was thinking in wrestling, Jimmy Jannetty might be great value Marty Jannetty. But then I realized in life, Marty Jannetty is great value Jimmy Jannetty. Because Jimmy Jannetty would never admit to killing somebody. Oh, wait, sorry. I had to go off the mat there. But,
either way, you're a Jannetty. It's not
you're
great.
A Jannetty. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this was kind of a mess. By the way, Jenny, I think you would have come up with a great. They should have done HQR3 T-shirts. That would have been kind of a neat looking T-shirt.
Oh, God, who would wear such a thing? God,
well, guys, six people in the Kensington Sports Arena. You
guy on Twitter.
that one guy on Twitter. This match is kind of a mess. I understand that they were, you know, doing a TV pilot, so they were probably a little skittish about time, and they wanted to fit in all of these title matches, so they probably were a little freakish about, you know, making sure they got this match in, and probably rushed it, and that's probably why most of it was a shit show, and then went to the draw two minutes before they were supposed to, even though no one knows that. So right. This was a mess. This was not good. Clearly, the tag division definitely needs some boosting. Fortunately, over time, the tag division actually doesn't become that bad. In fact, we have a couple of, in my opinion, some pretty Hall of Fame teams in this promotion within the next, 3 years. Mm-hmm. But this is a mess. Yeah, this is a mess. I don't know if this is the same Super D's that were in World Class 7 years earlier, Drew. But but they kind of wrestled like it. Although I guess one of the Super D's
they're 15-year veterans, Scott. So.
Well, there you go. Could one of them? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, really. So was Larry Winters, apparently, and none of us knew that. So 15-year loser isn't really a 15-year veteran, but you know, I don't know if either of them were Wild Bill Irwin, but anyway, yeah, this match was a mess. You could definitely tell that they rushed it to make sure that they got the next two matches in. I wouldn't even have bothered. I would have skipped this match and maybe cut promos, have Hunter Q Robbins cut a promo with the Super D's promoting this match for next week's show, if that's what their plan was, instead of trying to shoehorn this match in and ended up rushing it anyway.
Yeah, do we? Okay, I'll save that question for later. So moving on to the next match, which is a TV title match. Glenn Osborne versus Jimmy Snuka. Does anybody know anything about Glenn Osborne?
No, last time, I think he was on the show last time, and I kept thinking he was one of the headbangers. But that's not accurate.
Wrong Glenn.
Wrong Glenn, yeah. No,
wrong
but,
Glenn.
But
that's Glenn Ruth.
Again, oh yeah, Glenn Ruth. There you go.
Yeah.
No.
However, with
again,
the light in this building, but with the lighting in this building, what do we have even noticed, really? I mean, come on.
It's
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
No, Glenn Osborne. He was just another indie guy. I want to say he worked a WWF dark match or so, or you know, maybe a job match, but no. That's it. Just worked indies.
Nice.
He had a great look here, though.
Right. So they go before the match. I guess they decided, hey, we need to probably do some character works promos in this pilot. So they go literally to a locker room. It's just the backdrop is just lockers, like beige lockers from high school. And Stevie Wonderful is back there with Glenn. And he has like face paint? Is it paint? Is it a sticker? What is it? I don't know.
It's like corpse paint.
It's paint.
Looks like he's in a bad black metal band.
Yeah. It's something. And his voice. Also, I did not expect that voice to come out of this person. He sounds like Satan.
No, I didn't either. Yeah, I didn't either. It was crazy. I agree with that.
Not a bad promo. You know, effective, and that look is something. So I didn't hate it. Any thoughts on this promo?
I thought he was trying his damnedest to be Road Warrior Hawk.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, no, that voice definitely I did not expect to come out of that head.
Yeah, it was rough. So then we move on to his competition in this match, and he's going to do it. Well, there's going to be something resembling a promo that happens here. And that thing is Hunter Robbins, whatever, is with Jimmy Snuka, and they're in the back with Stevie Wonderful again. And Snuka is just dead ass eating an apple right into the camera's like lens and just spitting it everywhere, not saying anything, while HQR3 cuts a weak ass promo. And it is the weirdest fucking shit I've ever seen. He's wearing like a black do-rag and like these big ass glasses, like a mob boss or some shit, and just spitting apple everywhere. I was like, what the shit is this? Thoughts on this promo?
He looked like Teddy Long. With the do-rag and the glasses on. It took me a minute to figure out that was Jimmy Snuka. But man, the reveal when I realized it was him. And then the apple just comes pouring out of his mouth. Great promo.
Wow.
I feel like he was trying to channel like his 1980-81 heel WWF Snuka, which wasn't even close. This was just lazy. Or he was high, which wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, I was going to say it seemed closer to like a pilled out Superstar Billy Graham, like Kung Fu Billy Graham promo.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we talked about this on the last show when he was on the videotapes. Mm-hmm. He had been out of the WWF for, you know, a good year, and he was trying to get some mojo back. He knew he was the big man on campus, in ECW. So, but not even trying. This was garbage. I mean,
yeah.
At least we know now that Carlito stole the gimmick from something he watched 15 years earlier, but yeah, this was lazy, just a lazy interview and he's trying to get back his, the fact that you're trying to cut a promo that looks like you were a savage, like you were with Albano in 80-81, but dressed like you just got out of either the limo, the strip club, or the back of a bar that you just did some lines with, doesn't really help your cause much. Talk about half selling the promo. It was rough.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you what was in the promo because I was too busy staring at Snuka chow down on the apple.
I had no idea what he was saying.
It's so ridiculous. It doesn't fit.
No. So, moving on to the match. In the ring, Jimmy grabs the mic and says, this guy should hand over the belt to him right now before the match even starts. So, I was like, okay. Jay says that Snuka has turned his back on the fans by partnering up with HQR3 there. And then the Glenn Osborne starts this chant with the crowd, but I never could catch what it was. What were they saying? Did anybody get it?
Was it like madman or something like that? I
never picked up on it.
And yeah, usually I'm pretty good at figuring out what the crowd's chanting there, but I could never catch it. And even my closed captioning never did. So anyway, be curious if anybody catches that. I really want to know what it is. It kept driving me crazy. All right. So Osborne tries to do a quick roll up at the beginning. So I actually kind of appreciated that. I thought that was pretty sassy. They trade some quick offense. He grabs an arm bar for like forever. Osborne's like really focused on the arm most of this match. HQR3 starts getting involved, tripping him up. Snuka does a fist to the throat off the top rope. That was not bad. Looked pretty stiff. But then Osborne surprised him with the inside cradle and gets two on that. HQR3 just keeps getting cheap shots on Osborne. And then the ref does this brutal ref bump. I did not see coming. It was sort of out of nowhere. And it was filmed really like oddly beautifully. And it was like right there at the perfect moment to watch that ref just eat it. I actually really liked that spot. Osborne gets a power slam on Snuka and the visual pin, but the ref's knocked out. So as he looks for ref, Snuka turns the tables on him and gets the three count. Or does he? No, they decide that he's DQ'd after the ref wakes up. And then he flips out, throws Osborne out of the ring and takes the belt with him as he leaves anyway. You know, I thought this match had a lot more attitude, a lot more fire than what I've seen so far. The wrestling was what it was, but I enjoyed this. I thought Osborne was not bad to watch, and Snuka did all right. So I didn't hate it, Maddie.
Yeah, I thought this was pretty decent, too. But the one question I had, and maybe I just missed it while taking notes, why did we DQ Snuka?
I assumed it was for the
because I thought it was hitting it was I thought it was early. Osborne who hit the ref. Was it Snuka?
Yeah, according to the it says here, Snuka initially won the match and title at 8:41 with a roll up into a bridge, with a second referee coming out and counting the pinfall. Moments later, the initial referee changed the call after Snuka collided with him prior to the finish.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I had it down on
so
my notes.
It was not the
bump. Yeah.
No, it wasn't the bump. No. Yeah. It was something else.
It was after. Yeah.
Okay. But right. I thought the crowd was pretty good, and I thought the crowd actually helped this match a lot. Like I think with a dead crowd, this match wouldn't have enjoyed this match as much as I did. But yeah, I thought it was pretty decent for what it was. And I like in theory that they have a big star like Snuka coming in for this TV pilot. I like that in theory, but as we saw with the promo, may not work in execution. But this was pretty decent, I thought.
Scott?
Yeah, I mean, it was smart again to have a guy like Snuka on your roster, at least for star power. He doesn't bring much of anything else. The match really wasn't bad, and I got to be honest, Glenn Osborne was not the worst worker in the world. He, like Tommy Pyro,
he had charisma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, He did. And like Tommy Cairo, I think he gets that crowd and kind of gets the the mood of the room. So I got to give him credit for that. Snuka, you know, wasn't, you know, again, we're not talking, we're not even talking 1987 Snuka, much less 1981 heel Snuka. But definitely Glenn Osborne is, again, in that Tommy Cairo mold of a guy who kind of fits that, you know, fits that mold for that company. And yeah, the crowd kind of pushed this match along energy wise. Yeah, things at the end were pretty confusing, but obviously they didn't do any title change. I thought they were just going to keep the belt on Snuka and make a big title change, but they didn't do that. But yeah, I'll be honest with you, I would have been happy. I would have been happy if they ditched the tag match and gave this more time. I bet you it actually would have been a better match.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's in my opinion.
I feel like it was probably quite long enough. A perfect amount of Snuka. You know what I mean? Drew, what'd you think?
Yeah, what I was going to say was this, because Glenn Osborne so far, I think he has had the most crowd reaction. I mean, maybe even more so than Tommy Cairo.
Yeah.
I think and at least he's a more attractive character, mm-hmm. where if you're turning, you know, you're checking out this new wrestling TV show and you see Glenn Osborne and Jimmy Snuka, I think that's more appealing, or at least it's more attention grabbing. So I think they should have ditched the tag match. Or, you know what, keep the tag match, because that was the only one on the show. You need a tag match on the show. But just switch the order to where this opened the show. I think that would have been a good way to get the crowd hot from the start. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, this is our TV show. This is a new promotion. This is the match. This is what you can expect. And you've got, you know, Jimmy Snuka, and you've got Glenn Osborne, and he's got this crazy gimmick, and the crowd loves him. I think that would have been pretty cool. He's a guy. Him and Tommy Cairo, so far they're the standouts.
Yeah, I would agree with that. From what I've learned from watching ECW is that when they make cards, they just go from bottom to top, so they don't think about the sort of thing like me and you think about in that way, like switching up the order. I think they just stack it, you know, just build it like cards.
Some of those opening matches on those ECW 95 shows.
Right. Yeah.
Not great. Nah,
Broad Street Bully versus Paul Loria. Shit like that.
Hack Myers, baby.
Yeah. Don't you talk bad about Hack Myers.
Love Hack Myers.
So, moving on to our main event. Excited for this one now, because we get the champion, the Sandman, the Surfer Sandman, versus Kodiak Bear, who I also recall from our previous show and was excited to see him back. And this is really the first time that I've seen Surfer Sandman, because he's already sort of pretty much past this gimmick when I met him in my watching. So this was like a treat for me. Super, super loved Surfer Sandman. And he is with his love, Lady Peaches, who I extremely popped for because I'm obsessed with Peaches. So I actually like this match pretty good. Bear is, I feel like he's a pretty interesting wrestler because his stuff was like super basic, but it all looked real stiff, and he was believable to me.
And he was quick too.
Yeah,
surprisingly agile, quick.
Agile dude, mm-hmm. and believable to some extent as a challenger to Sandman. Matt, I would like you to describe one of the characters that we meet in this match. Uh-huh. Besides Peaches, we've talked about him a little bit in our last shows. His name is the Cosmic Commander.
Yeah.
And we finally get a look at him because we didn't really see him last time. Well, how would you describe him?
What was the name of the alien fellow from the Flintstones? Was it Great Gazoo?
Great Gazoo.
That's the Cosmic Commander. Same person.
That's a great reference. I love that reference. But yeah, he was something else during this match. Kept attacking Sandman quite a bit. Would choke him over the bottom rope. Stomp on him when Sandman gets thrown out. So it's a lot of real balanced as far as who has control over the match, because they sort of back and forth share it quite a bit, like more than I'm used to in a match. So I feel like that helped build a little bit of that drama. They do some back body drops, y'all. A couple of 14 back body drops.
Kodiak takes a good one too.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, I mean, they're not bad.
Yeah.
It's like Manny Fernandez on the thing there.
Just like Manny Fernandez. You're exactly right.
Sandman has to come to the aid of Peaches after the Cosmic Commander attacked her outside. And then
what did you call him?
The Click Commander from Jay and Silent Bob. Anyway. Anyway, it's fine.
Okay. Oh.
I edit the show, so.
I don't know. I feel like that should have to stay in.
Yeah, that's an outtake.
Yeah. As Sandman tries to come to Peach's aid, fucking Rockin' Rebel flies out, slams Sandman on the floor. I was like, okay, this is more ECW style right here. They're slowly leaning into it. So Kodiak drags Sandman back into the ring, does another back body drop, more attacks on Sandman. You know, by this time, Stevie Wonderful, I think, is like had all the coke on him, maybe that. So he's like already looking for the next score. So he's a little hopped up. And he believes that the Kodiak Bear is going to win this. And he says, I called this one right, and that is not one of my fortes. And I about died because it was hilarious the way he said it. Sandman comes back, gets crushed into a Kodiak Bear hug. And then fights out of that, goes to the top, gets a big kick off the top rope, goes back again, another big drop kick off the top rope, and wins. Sort of abrupt. I didn't hate the ending, but sort of wish it had a little bit more flourish. What are your thoughts on this one, Scott?
I enjoyed it. I think Kodiak Bear was a solid heel and a solid power guy to kind of, you know, push Sandman around in the middle of the match. It's definitely a snapshot and definitely belongs in the Missing Gems, because this is a Sandman that obviously nobody remembers, probably, unless you lived in Philly. So seeing this kind of, you know, face in peril, high flyer, second or top rope move Sandman is just bizarre. But the crowd was into it, and it was a well-told story. I really enjoyed this match a lot. And the crowd was hot into it. Almost called him Rockin' Robin. Rockin' Rebels, you know why? Whoever typed this on History, I don't know.
Yes,
if
on History WWE. Yes.
Yes. Either Graham or Landy actually typed Rock and Robin, so I'm gonna have to lay into it.
I was looking.
Mr. Cawthon or Mr. Land on that one.
Easter egg right there.
There's an Easter egg right there.
Scott, I was looking at the results for that because, you know, I was trying to find where and when the show was filmed, and I was just reading over the notes, and it said Sandman punches Rock and Robin.
Rockin' Robin. I know.
I thought, well, boy, well, yeah. I mean, it's ECW, so okay, but this seems a little aggressive.
Damn, man told her, stop singing the national anthem. No, this was definitely the match that they were obviously really pumped about for the whole show, and a good way to end the pilot.
Yeah.
Sandman wins, retains the title. I think Don Morocco is still involved somewhere in this mess in the title picture because he was champion earlier in the year. But I thought it was a good way to end the show. I enjoyed it. Are you going to talk about the post-interview separately?
Yeah. Yeah,
all right, we'll get into that. We'll get into that in a minute. But the match I enjoyed.
All right, so it was when Surfer Sandman came to the ring is when I had my epiphany. And it's not about the match or ECW in general, but it's about the Sandman himself and more specifically his name, the Sandman. Mm-hmm. And perhaps I'm the last person in this world to recognize this, which I'm open to because I'm an idiot and I know that. So you see, he's a surfer. What do surfers hate more than anything? Why, that would be sand.
Sharks.
Man.
Oh.
Sand, hey. Man.
Yeah.
So now I realize this is why he's called the Sandman, because surfers hate Sandman.
Mm.
Yeah, so mind blown by
that. Oh, Matthew.
I love it. I do.
I will say this had the most ECW feel of any match on this show, so I enjoyed that, like the just chaos with Rockin' Robin Rebel coming out to the ring and slamming Sandman. I thought the crowd helped this one a lot too, and I thought the crowd was actually hot throughout the night, as we saw. Mm-hmm. Yep. But kind of a meh match, I thought, but the whole package of everything and the crowd and how chaotic it felt really helped it. So for the whole package, I really enjoyed it. So, yeah, Surfer Sandman. Sandman.
Sandman. What do you think, Drew?
Yeah, I agree. Sandman at one point takes a insane bump. I think he does a leapfrog.
After the leapfrog. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And I don't know if that was a botch or if that was planned or if what happened, but he does a leapfrog and kind of stumbles. Mm-hmm. But essentially does the leapfrog, lands, then jumps. Again and just jumps through the middle rope straight to the floor.
Drew, it's the Sandman. I think you know the answer to that question.
Awesome.
Well, sure, yeah.
You know, this is like really before like lazy Sandman, right? So
lazy, drunk, and high Sandman.
So he's doing definitely. It.
That's true, but I mean, he's not a ring-tailed lemur with the agility there. So
easy for you to say.
Yeah. No, this was cool. This felt like a main event. It was. I wish they had maybe kind of built to it a little more throughout the night on commentary or in between the matches. But yeah, this was cool. I mean, Kodiak Bear, like I said, he's pretty quick and he's got a cool look. It looks different. I mean, he's a different guy than anyone else that we've seen tonight, mm-hmm. Which is cool. I mean, you have Sandman. Now, okay, the shows we watched last time, the best of compilations, mm-hmm. were those from 92 or from 93?
Those were 92. No, 92. I thought they were 92.
Oh, maybe.
No, they were 92.
Yeah, they were 92. They were before this. Yeah.
Before this.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say that started to feel with the crowd that they had on those tapes at the sports bar and the cabaret and some of the brawling and the blood, mm-hmm. that felt more like ECW than this did.
Yeah.
But this match got the closest. And I mean, that's one of the ECW stalwarts in there, Sandman. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. But yeah, the crowd was hot. Sandman was cool. Kodiak was cool too. Yeah, this was good. It's a nice little show. 45 minutes, you know, or an hour long, like self-contained episode. It mm-hmm. wasn't quite, you know, Nitro from the Mall of America, but I think there's something here. I think you can kind of dig around and find like little bits of spark here that you know, they're onto something a little bit.
I agree with that. You know, imagine a Wayne Manor or something on commentary.
See, that would have
really what we're missing here.
Yeah, there's no
and
about that.
That's not him. That's not just because he's a close personal friend of the podcast.
Right, exactly. Not at all.
Exactly. Yep.
So to wrap this show up, we go back to the locker room and we're going to have a promo with Sandman and Stevie Wonderful, but then Rebel comes in and chops the ever-loving shit out of Sandman's chest.
Yeah.
I went, what the fuck, man. Just attacks him, and then they brawl in the back, and then Jay and Wonderful close out the show by just sort of recapping everything. Any thoughts on this final bit?
It was cool. It sets up a new challenger. And or a new feud, or progresses the feud. I guess I actually think that we weren't quite sure what the history was between Sandman and the Rockin' Rebel. Mm-hmm. So I wish they would have done a little bit more to clarify that. But I mean, it was a cool, chaotic backstage brawl that kind of leaves you wanting more on a little bit of a cliffhanger.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's do our awards. Let's see. We got the Diamond Award. So this is favorite match, and I got to go with the main event.
Me too.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll go with the main event. I talked myself into it.
Kind of, there are some options here, but I feel like that's probably it. Cubic Zirconia for least favorite match. That is the tag match that I can barely bring myself to describe.
The tag.
Bad is how I would describe it. Yeah, the tag match.
Yeah, terrible. Yep.
Ruby is the MVP. And you know what? I'm giving it to Surfer Sandman. Because how could I not? He's the champ.
I agree.
I'm going to go with Glenn Osborne, actually.
I'm going to go with Glenn Osborne, too. Yeah.
I
knew Sandman was going to. Yeah, and I think we all knew Sandman was gonna put on a good match, but I had no idea that this guy was gonna actually hang with a future WWE Hall of Fame murderer. Mm. So
awesome. Wow. All right.
How awesome is that?
So. Opal for various. So a couple of highlights for me. Peaches, of course, and the legendary Tommy Cairo. My first experience with Surfer Sandman. Back body drops, always a highlight. And how could I ever forget the Apple promo? What about you, Scott?
Yeah, the Apple promo just blows my mind at how ridiculous it was. But yeah, I got to go back to the performance of Glenn Osborne. Not only a fairly decent promo, but wrestled a pretty good match. So that stood out for me that they have a pretty good TV champion. Obviously their main event picture is good. Sandman's a great champ. Obviously Glenn Osborne's a pretty good champ, but, the tag division, definitely they're still trying to work out the kinks, but at least they've got the upper half of the singles card in solid shape.
Maddie?
My one Opal award is going to the poor, miserable janitor who had to clean up the apple bits after they fell out of Jimmy Snuka's gullet.
Oh, no.
That poor son of a gun.
If only we could have seen that in the pilot.
It's the same janitor who was carrying the mop in the bar.
This poor guy.
Yes. cleaning the fluids from the Chestnut Cabaret. Yes.
What do you think, Drew?
I have to go with the apple promo. That was too hot to handle. I did have one question. Did anybody catch the name of the referee?
It was Jim Molino.
It was Jim Molino.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought they mentioned Joe Savoldi.
He was at the beginning.
Okay. Okay, so that was that a referee?
I recall that name too. I was like, that's an epic name for a fucking.
Well, now is that related to the Savoldis, the wrestling promoters, the Savoldis? Do you know?
You know, it's funny, Drew. I was thinking that. I'm not sure. I think that was the only match that guy did. I think Jim Molino pretty much did the rest of them.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
The Savoldis. You might be onto something there, actually.
Because I'm okay. Yeah, I mean, I just know somewhere in the Northeast, but I'm trying to figure out again kind of who was in charge of ECW at this point. Because our man, Stately Wayne, kind of clarified a couple things. And I do think they were part of the NWA at this time. At least that's what Cage Match has told me. But I don't know if. I want to say Todd Gordon was not yet in charge, and there was someone else running it. And I just wondered if that was maybe the Sivoldis or
well,
or
did
what.
We see Todd Gordon previously?
Yeah, he was on the the best ofs, but I don't know if he had any semblance of power or whatnot.
Yeah,
but
I want to say there. Yeah, because I'm just trying to think, because I remember Stately Wayne, you know, gave us some information, and I just can't remember quite what it was. And this whole time period of ECW is very confusing to me in terms of who's running it, if it's EC or if there's an NWA affiliation, all that stuff. So the Sivoldi name just stuck out to me. So I don't know if that's, I don't know, maybe Sivoldi is a very common name in the Northeast. I don't know.
That's got to be it, right?
Yeah.
So I do just have one more thing I want to mention briefly. You know, this, I mean, it was a fun show to watch, but I don't know if it was a quote-unquote great show. Mm-hmm. But, like, were any of you surprised that Sports Channel Philly didn't pick this up? Like, when you look at...
Yes, I am.
Right, because when you look at some of the stuff that airs on some of these channels at, like, 2 or 3 in the morning, it's fishing shows and Ron Popeil infomercials. Like, they could have found a spot for this, I would think, right? Like, throw it on at a Wednesday at midnight or something. Like,
yeah.
On some local affiliate. I don't know.
I think if it had come along at a different time, they would have. But 1992... the business in America is starting to take a dip, yeah. And they probably just figured it's not really worth it at this point.
Mm. Yeah, so I thought that was interesting that they didn't pick this up, because I mean it wasn't a great show, but it was entertaining. So
yeah,
you know, I would recommend it. You know, it's easy to watch. If anything, just watch the main event. but I enjoyed it quite a bit. And
yeah, 45 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it took me at least 2 years to do that, but for a normal person, it'd probably be fine. All right, before we go, what would you like to plug, Scott?
Oh, well, you could find me on Twitter at PTBPodfather, and of course, along with this show, check out all the wonderful things on the PTB Wrestling Network. 2020 was... maybe a bad year for everything else, but a good year for the feed. And 2021 is going to be even better, so check everything out.
Awesome. What about you, Maddie?
Oh, God, I've been on so many podcasts in December. I don't know what to mention.
I'm so popular. Oh, I've just got so much going on. It's so hard for
Keep
me.
The sand, man.
Now, smartass, if you'll let me finish. The easiest way to find my 10,000 podcasts, Drew, would be to go on my Twitter at msusa1991. Just follow me there. I usually share all of them. But I will just mention quickly my show, Piece of the Action, had 2 episodes of that in the month of December, 2 group watches of Rocky IV and Die Hard. Jenny, you were on the Die Hard one. That was a ton of fun. Please listen to those if you have not yet.
What about you, Drew?
Yes. So the final episode of You Don't Know Billy Jack is out. Check that out. Mm-hmm. I've got, which those, by the time this airs, they may be out. Countdown, my top 100 GWCW matches. Chad Campbell and I are doing that together.
Nice.
So yeah, be sure Fantastic. To check that yep. out as well. Yes. Keep your eyes and ears out, as in the coming couple months there may be a new podcast by me.
Nice.
Just a little tease. I won't give any more than that. And for the truth about Burger King, please follow me on Twitter at _burningspirits.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that. Please like all of Drew's Burger King tweets.
Yes, please.
I do.
We need the support. Yes, I know. I'm so grateful for you, Jenny.
I just can't resist it. They're always genius.
Oh. Hey, I'm just relaying my experiences.
Yep. So I have a podcast feed. It's called The Jenny Position. I have shows over there called Geek and Sassy. You heard about Pluto, Talking Pop, The Journey Through Infinity, which we will have a new one of very soon. Also, you can find me here on the wrestling feed with PTB NXT. We should have a new one of those coming soon as well. And Talking WCW. For my ECW show, you can check out the North South Connection podcast feed. We have a show called The Extreme Three-Way Dance, and we are going through all of ECW, and we are just now starting 1996. So I've witnessed the greatness that was 95, and I'm super excited to continue on with that one. Also, I have a show called TNA Never Dies on that feed. Less excitement to watch those shows, but I do love doing that podcast. So I will link all of this on my Twitter. You can find me at Jenny Position there. Thank you for listening.
I am the master of the clit. Remember this fucking face. Wherever you see clit, you'll see this fucking face. I make that shit work. No one rules a clit like me. Not this little fuck. None of you little fucks out there. I am the clit commander. When it comes down to business, this is what I do. I pinch it like this. Oh, you little fuck. And I rub my nose.